with the latest on the corporate front, all the market trends, expert opinion, and sound business advice. It is your unique window into the business world, direct from the heart of China.
Hello and welcome to Biz Today. I'm Zhao Yang in Beijing. Coming up, we'll have half an hour of business news and analysis. On today's show, the Beijing International Auto Show is underway. What's behind China's EV success? And Elon Musk says Tesla may start selling its humanoid robot next year. And now let's begin with our top story. Some U.S. and Western politicians and media outlets have recently claimed so-called overcapacity issue in China. They have focused on the growth of Chinese manufacturing in green industries like electric vehicles, lithium batteries, and solar panels. David Bali, a professor at Birmingham Business School, has dismissed Western accusations of China's EV so-called overcapacity. Bali underscored that innovation is important to China's EV success.
If you look at the auto industry as a whole in China, it's operating at about 50% capacity. Therefore, Western governments will say, look at that, huge overcapacity, there's clearly an issue. However, that's mainly in the internal combustion engine part of the industry. When we look at the electric vehicle industry, which is where the exports are coming from, then capacity is running at around three quarters. Now, that's still below the 80% level that most Western analysts think is the efficient level for running a plant. So this is a very moot discussion about whether there's overcapacity. They've also been, to be fair to Chinese auto firms, hugely innovative. If you look at the batteries in the BYD, they are amongst the best in the world. Very high energy density. So I think Western car makers should really look at collaborating more with Chinese firms in order to try and access that technology. And I think going forwards, what Europe in particular wants to see is investment from Chinese companies like BYD into making cars in Europe and also building a supply chain here. If we want to encourage a more competitive European auto industry that can make electric vehicles more cheaply, we are going to need China. That's going to require Chinese technology and ultimately Chinese investment.
So what are the driving forces for China's impressive growth of the new energy vehicles? And what does it mean for the global green transitions and carbon goals? For more on this, joined us on the line now are Dr. Zhou Mi, Senior Research Fellow with the Chinese Academy of International Trade and Economic Cooperation, and also Yan Liang, Professor of Economics, Willamette University. So Yan, first of all, where is China in terms of EVs, do you think? And what are main factors for China's EV success?
Right. So China right now accounts for more than close to half, actually 50% of all the new EV sales worldwide last year. And so that is 58%, and that is much higher than the second place, which is the EU, 25%, and also the United States is only about 10%. So China is definitely really the leading producer of EV in the world, but it's also a very large, as I just mentioned, the very major sort of adopter of the EV. And so I think in by any matrix, China is playing a leading role in that EV revolution. And I think the success has a lot to do with a combination of factors. So first of all, I think there is a really long-term strategic investment by the government in supporting core technologies, in investing in upstream critical minerals and also the downstream, public infrastructure like charging station that right now China has 4 million public charging stations. So all these public investments is very essential for the EV industries. But then we also have really solid industrial capacity and also very complete supply chains, right? Over 200 mature supply clusters in China. So that is very helpful to build this EV ecosystem. And we also have really relentless, innovative and entrepreneurship, right? So there were over 300 EV producers at one point, even though now with the fierce competition, that number, the EV industries becomes more consolidated. But we also have, newcomers like Xiaomi, for example, that is very competitive. On the first day when they launched their SU7, they sold out 90,000 units in the first 24 hours. So that just shows the kind of entrepreneurship, the kind of innovatability that's going to continue to drive the EV industry. And last but not the least, I think there is a very large consumer base that the Chinese consumers simply have the strong preference for EVs. Unlike in United States, for example, consumers still have a lot of reservations about adopting EV. And so there is an economies of scale of both the market demand, but also the production. So I think all of these are very, very important and critical for China's EV success. So it's definitely not just a single factor that the Western media and politicians like to make it to be, which is, it's all about subsidies. And in reality, I think China's success is really owing to this many, many factors, as I just mentioned.
Mm. And so, Dr. Zhou, in the year 2023, China's auto production and sales exceeded 30 million units, becoming the world's largest auto exporter. And it means that for every three new cars sold, one was made in China. So how do you see this dominance influencing the global auto industry regarding the marketing and the pricing?
Yeah, when we're talking about the auto industry, I think it's one of the best, the internationalization industries in the world. We have seen that so many countries are trying to be involved in the automakers, and it is very important for different countries to do what they can. Actually, when we're talking about that, if you're looking at traditional cars, you can find that many producers like the United States, like Japan and Germany, they are really good producers of the traditional cars. But when it comes to the new, the new ideas about the development of the new energy vehicles, I think that many of these car makers choose China to become one of their most important base to make the new cars. So why you can see the export data of the new vehicle cars in China coming from China is greater than many other countries. But I would argue that that is also based on some of the reasons that Ian have mentioned about the industrial basis, about the differences. And when we're talking about that, I'm not trying to say that it is only because China is good at that. It is that we have the very good base for support the development of that, and also the innovation-based strategies make it a really easier place for different stakeholders to find some new areas. When we're talking about that, I would like to describe the development of the new energy vehicles, like for the body. When we are standstill or just in the bed, we have a very, very slow movement. So our heart will not need to send more blood to the body. But when we are going to take part in the badminton or any kind of activities, the heart has some message, and they are sending more, the blood to the body. So that is the demand of the body. That has driving that the heart is giving them more support. So it is also like that relation between the supply and demand in the new vehicle areas, that China is producing so many cars because the world is needing so many cars. So it's kind of a very good feedback from the movement of the real demand of the market.
And so Chinese EV makers are going to Southeast Asian countries and Europe to set up plants. For example, BYD signed a land pre-purchase agreement to build a passenger vehicle factory in Hungary, and this will be the first Chinese auto company with a passenger car factory in the EU. So what are the benefits, do you think, of this for the company and also for the market it will serve?
Right, that's a great question. I think what we're seeing is China's EV producers are really investing abroad. So you mentioned Hungary in Europe. BYD is also investing in Thailand, which is in Southeast Asia, but also in Brazil, which is in Latin American continent. So we're seeing this sort of investment abroad. And I think that it's mostly driven by two reasons. One has to do with economic efficiency. So when you are producing in those markets, it's much easier to sell in those markets in terms of lowering your transportation cost, but also, getting the sense of, what the local markets want. So it will be better to meet the kinds of local demand. So there is an efficiency reason for that. You want to in those markets for those markets. Mm-hmm. And second reason, I think that has to do with some kinds of geopolitical and also, some of the trade protectionism measures that we're seeing from various countries. So when you're producing in those local economies, you are creating jobs and you are bringing some local incomes to those countries. And also you're able to avoid the tariffs in this case. So I think it makes great sense for Chinese manufacturers, EV producers, and also battery makers, so to speak, to invest and produce in those various markets. And so this specific one, BYD in Hungary, I think this is going to be great for the local economies. It's also great, I think, for BYD. The choice of Hungary, of course, is very sensible. They have very large amount of skilled workers. They have very good logistic hubs. So they actually have rails that will link Belgrade to Budapest to the port in Greece. So it's a holistic, I think, planning and the many strategic investments that it's going to bear fruit. And for the local economy, as we know, when Chinese battery company CTAL established manufacturing hub in Hungary, it creates now that 9,000 jobs. And BYD itself already had an electric bus manufacturer site in Hungary. So now with this new EV passenger car manufacturer, again, it's expected to create thousands, if not tens of thousands of jobs. And, you know, in the past, Hungary has attracted about 20 billion euros worth of investment from China in the past 5 years. So I think this is really a win-win strategy. It's going to be good for BYD. It's going to be good also for Hungary and also the broader EU economy to help them to accelerate this EV production and adoption to meet their goal by 2035 that all the new cars need to be EVs, not the internal combustion engines.
Mm. And so, Dr. Zhou, so how do you think can the development of the EV industry really help not only China, but also the world to get the green transitions and carbon goals?
We know that for the energy, you know, the use for the daily life, they really depends on different countries. Like for United States, they are depending on the use of the, you know, the vehicles allowed. They call it the country on the wheels. So for many other countries, it may be different. But for one of the most important things is that how can we treat the ways that we are having a living? And, you know, the people are usually getting better, you know, support by the logistics, by moving from one place to another. And for many of these developing countries and emerging economies, they are in the process of urbanization. And the urbanization are making that the cities become bigger and bigger. It is a really big challenge for a lot of people to travel from one place to another. Well, from another side, we see that for the cargo logistics, it's a really important thing for us to make the market better reflect what it wants to have from what it can provide. So actually, the logistics need also a lot of energy. So if we are able to provide the EVs, it will change the demand allowed. So they can have a less demand for the crude oils. They can use some crude oil for the petrochemical industries instead of just to burn it. So it's a really big increase about the abilities of people of making a living. Well, on the other side, I would say that EVs are also providing so many new opportunities and you know, some kind of development room for a lot of enterprises, like for the digital economies, like for some of the, you know, service providers. They can have a better connections and be able to have a much safer driving experiences. So a lot of people will be involved in the EVs, and if they are able to use that EVs, which are much more cost-efficient ways, they would like to have it.
Mm-hmm. And so, Yan, so now some U.S. and Western politicians and media outlets are hyping the so-called overcapacity in China's EV sector. So who determines the optimal capacity for an industry? And Nicholas Lardy, a senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics, he said that the concept of excess capacity is potentially harmful. So what do you make of that?
Right. So I would agree with Lardy. I think, first of all, we need to put things in perspective when it comes to EV. The International Energy Agency, the IEA, has projected that the global demand for EV is going to reach 45 million by 2030, which is 4.5 times the current number in 2022. So in that sense, there's really a large demand for EVs. And I agree with Dr. Zhou. I think EV plays a very critical role in decarbonization for climate change to really effectively to cope with climate change. Right now, we know that in many countries in the world, like EU, as I mentioned, they have a goal by 2035. They need to phase out all the internal combustion engine cars. And in the United States, the EV adoption rate now is only 8%. What that means is that there is a huge market in these mature economies, but also in the developing countries for these new energy, new green products and green technologies. So I don't really think there is a sort of demand issue that we create this kinds of overcapacity problems. And again, the Western economies, I think what they really worry is about, you know, China's competitiveness to be able to sell not only to the domestic markets, but to the international markets. But at the same time, we need to know that this is not an issue about overcapacity. This is the issue about competitiveness. You know, China only exports about 20% of EV to the rest of the world. Where we look at the traditional auto exporters like Germany, South Korea, and Japan, they export anywhere between 50% to 80% of their home car production. So if this is a overcapacity issue, then all these countries have a lot more overcapacity issue than China. So I think, you know, and when we look at the traditional sort of the matrix about capacity, we look at, for example, the capacity utilization, which again, China does not have the problem. 76% is the current utility capacity utilization rate, which is basically on par with, you know, EU, the US, Brazil, and so on. When you look at the inventory, that is pretty, you know, under the control in China. And also when you look at the industrial profits and all those above scale industrial profits was pretty decent, 10.2% in the first quarter of this year. So by any matrix, I think this overcapacity issue is totally overblown.
And you mentioned the U.S. government has also, you know, offered subsidies to stimulate the EV sales in the country, and Europe also does that. So could you elaborate more on that?
Right. So in the United States, you know, as we know, in the very recent years, it has passed three industrial policies like the Inflation Reduction Act, like the Infrastructure and Jobs Act, and also like the Chips and Science Act. And all these, you know, industrial policies are to support various industries, including the EVs, you know, and semiconductors and so on. And I personally have purchased a Tesla EV, and I got $7,500 of the federal money to subsidize on this car purchase, and also another $3,000 from the state subsidy. So it's clear that countries are doing this to support their considered as, you know, strategic and technological advanced industries. So I think, you know, for the United States to say that China is subsidizing and therefore has this sort of, you know, undue, right, competitiveness, I think that is simply double standards, right? They're doing exactly what they accuse China of doing. And I think EU is the same thing. They also have subsidies on the production side and also on the consumer adoption end. Mm.
So, Yan, so how to treat those protectionist measures today? And what's its impact on the long-term development of countries involved, the US, the European Union, and China?
Right, I think that's a great question. I think, you know, China is not really into this sort of tit for tat measure at this point. I think what, you know, all countries should do is really trying to find effective ways to transition, like I said, to the green economy. And I think these kinds of protectionist policies is going to be really counterproductive. I think I'm not too worried about the so-called subsidy race. I think it's really important to provide public support for this kind of energy transitions. But I think protectionist policies like tariff hikes or quota or many other kinds of protectionist policy could be really counterproductive, because it's not going to be conducive for the global competitiveness and the global efficiency to move on to the green economy.
Mm. Well, we're speaking with Yan Liang, Professor of Economics, Willamette University, and also Dr. Zhou Mi, Senior Research Fellow with the Chinese Academy of International Trade and Economic Cooperation. And after a short break, Elon Musk says Tesla may start selling its humanoid robot next year. Stay with us. You are listening to Biz Today. I'm Zhao Yang in Beijing. Tesla's humanoid robot is still in the lab, but CEO Elon Musk said it may be ready to sell by the end of next year. Several companies are betting on humanoid robots to meet potential labor shortage and perform repetitive tasks that could be dangerous in industries like logistics, retail, and manufacturing. Musk told investors that Tesla robot should be able to perform tasks in the factory by the end of this year. So, Yan, first of all, what's the latest development of Tesla's humanoid robot, and what can they do in the factory?
Right. So I've seen some really amusing videos, the demo videos that Tesla posted. So the so-called Optimus, this is the second generation of the humanoid produced by Tesla. It's very much like human shape, and it has the combinations of, you know, pistons, force plates, and levers that would allow this robot to really walk like a human. It stands upright, and it has the functional limbs, hands, and the neck that would turn. So it will be able to perform many of the human movements like squats, and it's able to actually do some basic yoga poses. So it seems to be very, to be able to handle some of the very delicate sort of tasks, like putting eggs. In one of the videos, the robots will be able to take an egg and then put it in a different basket. And also, these robots are outfitted with artificial intelligence, so they would be able to perform the tasks in a very autonomously way, and they will learn, for example, sort of new skills, even they're not prompted to. So one video that it shows the Optimus, they're sorting the building blocks by color. So they're able to pick one up and then put it in a color corresponding bin. Even sometimes it would pause to fix some of this block that got tipped over. So it's a very sort of intelligent kind of robots that would really do well in the factory setting in terms of performing some of the more delicate sort of jobs. So some of the videos are showing this robot is folding the laundries and, you know, doing all kinds of relatively mundane tasks. But it just shows the great potential of these humanoid robots.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Zhou, so how important is humanoid robot for Tesla, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a really good innovation or abilities for us to look at the human-like the robots, because people are feeling different when we're seeing just some of the robot. I mean the traditional industrial robots in the past. But we have to be careful about that. You know, when we are talking about that, Elon Musk, when he has promised to build a super manufacturing of the Tesla in the United States for nobody there, but actually he cannot do that. So when he came to China, to Shanghai, they built that, and it's gradually improved the capacities in the abilities of automation. I think it's a really promising way for us to think about that, but we still need to consider about several different scenarios, like how can they be charged, or if they are able to handle very complicated things, or, you know, it's different, like just post some gesture. It should have a better ability to handle very heavy things with very delicate things. And I think that is definitely very potential to be used in different environment, like some dangerous, some harmful environment. They can use the robot to deal with the situation. But they still need to consider about how can we charge them? How can we make them more efficient? You know, when when the workers are employed, they only are provided some dinner and lunch. But when the robots are there, they need to have much more power to support the operation of the whole process. So I think that is much more potential, but we still need to consider more, different situations and make it more practical. That is one way that we see that Tesla is doing, because it has put the cost of using robot much lower than before.
Mm-hmm. And so, on the development of this robotics with AI, how would you describe the picture of the AI research and development around the world?
Right. So I think, you know, this is an area that really has a lot of potential, and investors are definitely pouring, you know, billions of dollars, even trillions of dollars in the kinds of investments in terms of the hardware, you know, all the GPUs, but also in terms of the softwares and all these large language models. And now with, you know, humanoid robotics. So definitely the market potential is very large. And definitely, I think the technology is very exciting in terms of, you know, what you can do with all these humanoid robots, right? So Optimus is supposed to be built in a way that could be massively produced. So this is not just going to be one or two out there in the market, but it will be able to scale up the production. And Elon Musk back in 2022 said that these robots is going to cost less than $20,000. So you can easily see, you know, even households, not just businesses, are able to utilize these robots and do all kinds of, you know, mundane or repetitive or dangerous tasks. Mm-hmm. So I think the market potential is very large. And I do think that Tesla is needing some kinds of innovation. They're not doing very well in their EV businesses right now. So I think autonomous driving and also humanoid robots are the next, I think, areas for them to have some potential growth. That said, I think we also need to be mindful of some of the, you know, barriers in terms of the downside risks of AI, how it's going to affect jobs and how it may, you know, create some regulatory headaches. And also, I think, you know, the market right now it's quite heated. And so that's why you see last week, for example, you know, NVIDIA's stock fell by 10% in one day. And some of the major AI companies or AI related companies also saw their stock fallen. So I think, you know, it takes time, and it also takes very creative ways to come up with regulatory framework and also the way how AI is going to apply it. I think, you know, in China, the direction is we're going to apply this in industries, healthcare, education. And in the United States, I have to say, it feels less certain how AI is going to be applied. And there's a lot of concerns about how it may replace jobs.
Mm. Well, we're speaking with Yan Liang, Professor of Economics, Willamette University, and also Dr. Zhou Mi, Senior Research Fellow with the Chinese Academy of International Trade and Economic Cooperation. And that's all the time we have for this edition of Biz Today. I'm Zhao Yang in Beijing. Thank you so much for listening.